Should you take five?
Yeah.
I'm Allie Grant.
And I'm Jess Yu.
Welcome to Follow Me, your resource for all things influencer.
Brought to you by Be Social Group.
Now, let's see who we're following this week.
People feel a certain way about your brand, you know? It's not just, that's a pretty product, let me buy it. Like, people want to get to know the brand, like, who is the brand, you know? And I think as a brand, you have to show up almost as a creator does and show your personality. It's not just pictures of your pretty product. Like, that just doesn't work anymore.
Welcome to the Follow Me podcast, your resource for all things influencer marketing. I'm here with Jess, my co-host. Hello, Jess.
Hello.
How are you feeling today?
I'm so tired.
You're tired and you're cold.
I'm tired. I'm cold. I'm bloated.
Oh, interesting. Maybe there's something going on with your hormones.
That was such a really bad segue for our guest. It does not do any justice for the fabulous interview we did with Sif Hader. But what's going on with you, Allie? What's going on?
No, I think, typically we start with like who we're following this week, but we were just kind of chatting about like, what are we following on the internet? And we're both kind of like fatigued and
content
sort of
overload.
Tired of everything on the internet.
Everything, truly. Well, because our jobs are 24/7 scrolling on all the platforms, making sure that we're at the height of what we do. You know, I don't even know what I'm saying right now. I'm so tired.
I understood what you were saying. Like, you were saying we need to be at the peak, the pinnacle of the industry.
We're obviously at the peak and pinnacle of our industry right now. I was trying to say we need to keep our pulse on all trends, all social media,
all
things internet.
Social media isn't for fun for us. It's like fully work. But then like we have our own personal channels where we create content or what. But like, I don't know. And I think with everyone just posts the same things. Is that like, do we realize this?
It's the same thing. And I know we kind of talk about it with Sif, but everyone and anyone is their own influencer. But I feel like TikTok has really just democratized who can go viral or not, but people who are trying to replicate those viral videos. So I'm seeing I'm seeing 1,000 get ready with me's on my feed
of the same
per
thing.
Day.
Yeah.
And people are just trying to replicate what's popular, which I guess is the point of TikTok and social in general to go viral. But I need some newness. I need some freshness.
Yeah. So like we don't have anyone that we recommend to follow this week. Our recommendation is get off the internet this week.
Yeah. I think when you get to a point where you're fatigued, shut off the laptop, shut off the phone after this. I'm leaving it.
Have you ever deleted Instagram?
No, that's whoa. I deleted my account?
Yeah, no, it's like I hear people like delete the app for a month or something and they're like, it's the best thing ever.
I would be fired from my job. Allie would fire me.
Yeah, I mean, it would be really hard to do our job without Instagram. But just look at it like 9 to 5. Like, you know, we look at it all day and then I find myself like in bed watching TikToks for an hour. I'm like, what? Like, oh my gosh, like put this away.
So what are things that you do to actually get away from social? Like, do you actually scroll TikTok in bed? You go to bed at like 8.
Yeah, that is true. I do, but I haven't recently actually because I got bored of it. I'm like, I'm not even laughing anymore. This isn't fun. It isn't fun because the content's all the same. So, I mean, I don't know. I think deleting the app is one idea. Having boundaries of like when you can go online and not. I think there's certain apps that like give you little timers or something like that. And then on TikTok, you can actually add like a timer of how long you can spend. And then it kind of like alerts you.
I always ignore it.
Oh, you have it on?
Yeah.
And you ignore it?
Yeah.
So it doesn't do anything?
No, it doesn't.
I don't know. Well, I feel like this episode kind of relates to what we're just talking about, but mostly about gut health and the fact that we're both bloated and that's challenging too.
Well, I also think Sif is a really great resource for both brands and influencers, actually. She spits some knowledge on being a founder of a D2C brand, but also as a content creator herself, how she's marketed her products, but to also understand the creator economy as a brand too.
Yeah, and how to start a product from like manufacturing, minimum order quantities, and then how she talks about how she used influencers super bootstrapped to launch her product. She had no money to pay them. So she literally just gifted them in hopes that they liked the product and shared about it organically, which is really the reason for her growth and success. So excited to get into this episode. Today, we are so excited to chat with Sif Haider, entrepreneur, host of the Dream Bigger podcast, and founder of Array Beauty. Sif was working in the beauty space as a blogger and podcaster and found herself struggling with her own health issues. She ultimately turned to natural remedies as a last resort and began troubleshooting with her own combination of herbs and vitamins and found herself feeling better than ever. She quickly realized that holistic remedies had the power to address women's toughest day-to-day health issues and began building Array with her husband, Nish, to share these solutions with others. Let's welcome Sif to the podcast. Well, I'm so excited you're here because personally, I have the worst gut issues.
Oh my gosh.
I am like so bloated. I have horrible gas. I basically can't eat anything without having like a severe reaction to it. I've ordered your product and I love it. So I just want to start there. Like, how did you come up with the concept? You obviously must have gut issues. And what has been the process so far?
So I mean, it's like so random, but obviously like the best products are born from your own issues. And I had just issues with my immune system when I was younger, like all throughout high school, all throughout college. And during like probably like my first 2 years out of college, I ended up fracturing a rib from a chronic cough. And I went to my doctor because, you know, that's not normal for a 23-year-old to like have such a gnarly cough that you fracture a rib. And I was just prescribed codeine. And yeah, there was like no plan of action, no nothing. And I asked, but it was just like, no, it's okay. Just go home. And I was like, I'm like what, 22, 23, like early 20s. And I feel like I'm so geriatric, you know, like this is shit that happens to your grandmother, if even that. And so I was like, okay, everything that I've done so far, which is going to the doctor, like popping antibiotics at every given opportunity, like, you know, like Tylenol for like just basically like everything chemically laden. Whatever this is, even though there's a time and a place for it, it's just not working for me right now. So I was like, let me look into holistic modalities, which back then was very niche. It just like the, you know, wellness wasn't what it is today. There was, I didn't know if an Erewhon, like it was just a different world. And so I dove headfirst into anything I could find on holistic remedies from naturopathic doctors, from functional medicine practitioners, and just like kind of seeing like, okay, can I take this? And just started being my own guinea pig. And started to see huge improvements in my own immune system. And then from there, it was like, okay, you know, I had all of these like stomach issues and just like other issues. Like, you know, I would run really anxious or like I was very fatigued. And so I started guinea pigging on myself for everything, like just kind of troubleshooting myself. And basically, like there were so many individual supplements in my home that I was, it had become this apothecary and I was this witch doctor. And
you're creating potions.
Yeah, like for real. Yeah. And so I remember sitting on my couch and obviously by this time I'd like started to treat my then boyfriend with supplements as well. And I remember just sitting on my couch one day and being like, Nish, you know, it's so crazy that I can find whatever I need for skincare and for supplements. It's just so convoluted. Like, what if there was like this like really cool supplement brand that was very easy to understand and like actually worked? And he's like, you know, we should do that. And that was how Array was born. We wanted to kick off the company with Bloat and Calm because everyone I knew was always complaining about how bloated they were.
We're all bloated.
Hot girls are always bloated.
Yeah. Hot girls with stomach issues, it's a real thing, you know? And it was just a constant conversation with my friends, with like random people I'd meet at dinners, you know? And also how anxious everyone was. And so what we learned is that these are two issues that are most common amongst women. And it's also like an infinity loop. So when we're anxious, our body's going to fight or flight mode, which makes digestion really tough, which is why you hear about people suddenly having IBS during periods of high stress when they'd never had stomach issues before, and vice versa. If we are bloated or have like digestive discomfort, like just think about the amount of mental real estate it takes up. It takes over your whole life. All you can think about is how shitty you feel. And so we really wanted a holistic solution to kind of the bloating and digestive piece. And we knew that the two of them would kind of do the job.
I also think too, a lot of women and a lot of friends and myself too, the discourse is that we just kind of accept that, oh, we're just going to be bloated, or, oh, yeah, we're just anxious, you know? And we don't really think about the internal reasons why. It's just kind of figuring out a quick solution.
I think that a lot has been normalized. And I just want to, I'll say this until I'm blue in the face, just because something is common doesn't mean that it's normal. And I feel like specifically for women, we have been conditioned to think that it's okay to feel subpar. Like that is just the, you know, norm. And it's not the norm. Like think about every single time you have a really, really gnarly like period cramp and you're like, this is just normal. It's actually not. You probably need to normalize and stabilize your hormones. Like you probably need to go figure out what is going on there, because this is our body's way of speaking to us, right? And there is a way to kind of actually like set yourself up for success and ensure that like your standard of normal is very comfortable so that you're thriving in life. Like we shouldn't just settle for feeling like shit all the time. Like that's insane.
No. And like bloat specifically.
Oh my God.
Is the worst.
The worst.
Constipation.
It's
I'm actually in like a good place. And I went to a doctor, did the whole thing, like literally got a colonoscopy, like A through Z. I've tried to figure my situation out. And I think it's your gut health is so much related to like your mind and mental health.
Absolutely,
and all of that. And so it's like self-care has been the biggest thing. So moving, walking, like meditating, like taking care of myself while also like adding in supplements and things like that. Like the doctor's like, here, just take Miralax every day. Miralax is like,
are you
the
kidding
worst.
Me right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, they're like, no, you just take it every day for the rest of your life. You're fine. Like, that's like pure chemicals you're putting in your body. And
also,
it's like a Band-Aid.
It can also cause like really like severe issues with your bowels. Like, I've spoken to my friends who are doctors whose clients have had to get bowel removal surgery at like in their 20s because they've become addicted and fully dependent on laxatives. It's really fucked up.
Oh my God.
Yeah, sorry if I'm first.
No, we love to cuss here, especially related to pooping. Literally. When did you launch Array? What year was that?
2020.
Oh my gosh. Okay, pre-pandemic or during pandemic?
Right in the middle of it, March 2020, the world shut down, we launched, so.
Okay, so you were probably working on it for like a year or so before that.
Oh yeah, like a year and a half.
And what was the process of that? Like, so you said you talked to your then boyfriend, and then it's like, what's next?
So first was finding a doctor who we wanted and trusted to formulate like the best of the best products. And so it was a lot of speaking to different doctors until we found the one who we loved. And actually, interestingly enough, the doctor, Dr. Natalie Mulligan, she's a very dear friend. She was actually the first doctor I spoke to. And I remember coming home from that meeting. She was a friend of a friend's. And I told Nish, I was like, I think I found our girl. And he's like, Sif, you're crazy. Like, you've spoken to one person. Like, let's not get ahead of ourselves. And I was like, no. Like, she was really smart. And she owns the biggest eating disorder clinic in Canada. So she was dealing with like the most severe of, you know, digestive health and mental health issues. And I just knew that she was our girl. So first step was finding a doctor. And then it was, okay, like finding the right manufacturer who would do like the minimum order quantities that we needed, because it's like, you know, you're a startup, like you don't have unlimited money. You want to test a concept without like literally draining every penny that you have, and also ensuring that that manufacturer used the level of organic ingredients that we wanted. And then it was figuring out our branding. Like, it was literally what I like to tell other founders or anyone who's wanting to start something is that when you're looking at a business that's like already kind of like out there, it feels like a really big task, right? But instead, what you should focus on is like literally one foot in front of the other. It's like, what can I do that's the next thing? And just be hyper-focused on getting that thing done and then move on to the next thing. Like, don't let all of these things like scare you or overwhelm you. It's just one thing after the next, and identify the biggest needle-moving things that you need to focus on in order to like make progress.
I think that's been the major theme to past guests that we've had and, you know, our conversations too, of starting a business or being a part of something in the creator economy. It feels so overwhelming, especially in product, even though you have proof of concept, you have everything, you maybe have some resources, but putting that foot over the other and then finally getting to like, oh, wow, I've made it this far by myself.
Yeah. It's, I mean, even right now, like this is like such a crazy analogy, but like we are furnishing our house. And I remember initially when we signed our lease, I was like, oh my God, like, what am I going to do? Like, there, I was so overwhelmed with the number of rooms there were. And I was like, no, Sif, like, it's just one room. Just one room. Figure out, like, what the overarching theme is for the house and figure out the one room. And it's like that. Like, that is how building a startup is as well. That, like, it's like the one thing and then you move on to the next thing. Like, don't let six different things overwhelm you so you don't do anything at all. And then you have, like, that, you don't move because of
yeah,
that, you know?
Yeah, you're sort of paralyzed in your own fear or, of what could be.
Mm-hmm.
So you get your manufacturer, you figure you have your product. Did you have to do like a lot of like back and forth, like testing?
Oh,
and like,
totally. Yeah.
Okay. So it's like finding the ingredients, the formula, honing in on that. Mm-hmm. Then packaging is like a whole other thing, right? Mm-hmm. Design.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to launch, which was, you said November.
March 2020.
Oh, literally March 2020. Oh my gosh. That's
How did
crazy.
You feel? Wait, was it before COVID or was it?
It was right during. So we did a softer launch with like basically like my community and just testing it out. And this is also a really good tip that, you know, anyone who's listening, who's thinking of starting a business, if you can test it with a smaller group, like maybe you launch it to like close friends and you don't do this like big splashy launch, that's a really good way of getting any feedback when it comes to pricing or like really just seeing if you even have a minimum viable product. Like, is your messaging successfully speaking to people, you know? So we'd done that with like a smaller kind of like soft launch, but we really launched March 2020 and it was right during the pandemic. Like, I remember, you know, taking things to the post office and we were in Canada back then and the guy at the office, like the post office being like, well, I don't know if this is going across the border, so you should probably take it home. I was like, I'm leaving it here. Like, you or someone else is getting this to our customers. I'm not going home with this. So
yeah,
it was really crazy from an operational standpoint to launch product during a time which was just no one knew what was happening, you know, mm-hmm. but at the same time, I will say that we were really, really, I don't know, like, I think we were just very lucky that there was such an innate need for products like ours. Like, everyone was at home, like, bloated and anxious. They were just
literally
reading the news and, you know, eating pizza and sourdough, you know?
Yeah.
So everyone was just bloated and anxious. And there was also this heightened interest in people's health. And so I just think that our company was born at the right time and to be able to service like a very large amount of people. So yeah, I was like, we were very lucky in that sense.
And did you use influencers as part of your launch strategy?
We had no budget. Okay. We put our wedding money into the company and we bootstrapped it. We'd never raised anything. Like, it was literally like a small amount of money that went into launching this business. And I knew that influencers would have a huge part to play in it. And so what we did was we just gifted really heavily. And I was very honest with every influencer that we gifted to. And I was like, look, you know, we're a brand new startup and I think that this product is really going to help you. I'm so sorry that I don't have money to pay you right now, but just try it. That's all I want. And I don't need you to post anything. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened that the product was excellent and we had some very, very key influencers post about it. I've said this a billion times before, but Melissa Wood, who I'm obsessed with, like I love her so much. She's an angel. And she was really the first person to talk about our product. And I think that's just kind of the thing that was the domino effect. And like other people started talking about it. We started seeing like in our Shopify backend, like celebrities who I didn't even know how to gift were buying our products. And, you know, it was out of control. And like anytime that it was like a very organic growth that happened. And yeah, that's kind of what happened, that like we were really scrappy because honestly speaking, we had no money. And then as soon as we started to make a little bit money, we put a little bit of like whatever we had, we recycled it into partnerships with those influencers who were organically talking about our product. Because I remember with Melissa, I was like, let me pay you, please. Like, let me pay, you've made me so much money. Like, this is for you. And that's kind of how we've always had our partnerships going. We have like 5 to 6 partnerships across the whole year.
Okay.
Like longer term.
More like ambassadors.
Yeah. And these are like influencers who have talked about our product, like organically, like we know that they love it. It's not this like random one-off, like, I like your content. Like, please like pretend you like my product sort of thing. Like it's very organic. And I think that that's what's worked for us. And I think it just resonates with people's audiences as well.
I think you just gave such key advice for both brands and influencers on the brand side of things. I think a lot of startups and new brands kind of come to talent. We see it all the time and say, we will gift you in exchange for X amount of stories. We need you to sign a contract for using for gifted products.
This is like giving
this is not the world anymore.
Right? Yes. Yeah. And it's such a bad approach.
And listen, I, from a brand side, right? Like if you don't know any, thankfully, like what I had going for me was that this was my entire world. I was a creator ahead of starting Array and I knew everything that was like icky and just not done. And
because you had experience.
Yeah. And I think what brands have to understand is, yes, listen, I know that it's expensive to send product out, even like, you know, when you have literally no money, like each one of those products is like, you know, your money, you know, but the thing is, all it takes is one person posting about your product and you saying that you need something in exchange. It just devalues a creator's time and their talent. And it's just not how you get anywhere. It's like they can just buy the product. You know what I mean? Like they don't need the product in exchange for like it's just not how it works. Like no good creator is going to agree to that. And it's just going to be icky and you're going to get a bad name in the industry.
I also think, too, believe in your product, right?
100%.
Let the product speak for itself.
Thank you.
And on the creator side, too, I also think that in exchange, like, organically share the products that you're loving. You can't be reaching out to these brands willy-nilly without organically sharing or ever talking about them and expect a partnership opportunity or money.
Well, I love that you guys say this because, you know, I think that now there's so many creators that audiences are quite discerning with when it comes to who they trust. And I think that like as we move kind of and the industry grows, I think a little like are there, yes, there's like such a thing as brand awareness play when it comes to influencers, but a lot of brands are now focused on ROI as well, right? And if no one is purchasing from a creator, what it means is the creator has not a lot of credibility. And how they build credibility is consistently talking about a brand, you know? So the smartest creators that I've seen are constantly talking about the brands, even in an organic capacity that they're being, that they have paid partnerships with. Like it is the smartest thing. And they're not like one day talking about, I don't know, like this brand of like one thing. And then tomorrow, like talking about a competing brand, like they're just very strategic about what it is that they're promoting and brands catch on to that. And listen, like, let me tell you, all my friends are other brand founders. We want to pay creators, but like we select the creators who are strategic about how they present things to their audience.
Mm-hmm. And support your brand in an organic way too.
100%.
Like, let the check come later when after you've shared organically, after you realize that you actually do love this brand.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, those are the best partnerships. Like we have like 3 year long, like since we launched partnerships with certain creators, like 3 years.
Wow. And so you keep renewing them year after
hell
year.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Like we know they love us. They've done so much for us. We want to grow with them as they grow with us. You know, like we have no intention of like, we don't care about so-and-so. Like, no, we'll like grow with our creators who supported us from the beginning or like even just organically at a later stage, whatever it is, because it's so authentic. And I think people catch on to that.
Do you use other methods of marketing, like other than influencer? Do you do like editorial, experiential, anything
like
that?
Yeah, we're big on events and experiential. We're also big on community-led marketing. So we, in our marketing calendar, have like, basically like we identify what are we doing for a community every month. And for example, we just did in March, which was Sleep Awareness Week. So we did a sleep challenge for the month where we had just a small task that someone could do across the month, like basically every single day. It was like across 10 days and basically things that improve their sleep. And we picked two winners who like randomly selected who participated in the challenge, who then received a staycation on us. So we put them up at like one of our favorite hotels in the city. And it's like a whole experience. We, you know, gifted them with all our products, like an Oura ring, like an outfit from Set Active. And then then another person got an entire mattress, like bedding set from one of like our friends' companies as well, Hush. So we are really good about also doing things for our community and like making them feel like they're influencers as well. And this is just like one example. Like we send our PR mailers to our customers as well. Like we are always putting our customers first and ensuring that like our marketing budget is also reserved for our customers and not just influencers.
I love that because I think that's also been a conversation too, that consumers want to feel like influencers themselves. They see the big brand trips and they see all the PR mailers that influencers get. But at the end of the day, your customers are the ones
paying for that, basically, right?
Yeah.
With like this whole trend of de-influencing, I think people are just tired of seeing brands like blow money on all things influencers with like no gratitude for the people that actually got them there, which is their customers. So I have very strong feelings about this. And it's something that we've done right from the beginning. I've said it like literally since we launched our company that our customers are influencers and treat them like that. Like when we launched our brand, and still actually to this day, we had the same package that would go out to customers as they would to influencers. It was this beautifully packaged experience. Both influencers and our customers would get a Polaroid from us. And that Polaroid went viral because people were so excited to get, like, to understand, like, who the founders were of the brand. And we think that the success of Array is very much hinged upon the fact that we've always treated our customers with equal importance as our influencers.
So that's brilliant. And I feel like a lot of brands are starting to think about that more in a bigger way.
Yeah. And if you think about TikTok, for example, it's really become the democratization of influencers, right? And so many videos with us in it have gone viral, and it's literally been just everyday people, like not influencers as like, it was just like, you know, some random girl who has like an office job who decided to go on TikTok and talk about like what she does for her gut health, and it just exploded. And anyone can be an influencer these days. So why gatekeep those experiences and those kind of things that you do for influencers for just someone with like X number of followers? Like it should really be for everyone.
Totally. Yeah. And I would buy a product coming off like a random girl on TikTok talking about her gut health in her office versus a celebrity placement, because like that really just doesn't
resonate for you.
It doesn't resonate.
Yeah. Well, if you think about when you make the bulk of your purchases, right? Like we all have influencers we trust and we follow and we love, but also like you are listening to your best friend. Like you're listening to your mom. You're listening to the random girl at the dinner party who very passionately talked about a product. What about those people? They're influencers too.
Mm-hmm. And I'm more likely to purchase.
Exactly.
Yeah. So do you use TikTok as a big part of your marketing strategy as well, like as a brand creating content?
So initially when we launched our brand, we were early on TikTok and we had videos go viral back in the day. It was essentially like Nish, who's my husband and my co-founder, and I like doing everything. And we had like help from like another girl who was kind of like helping us with TikTok stuff. She's my brother's friend. And obviously as the company scaled, it kind of became like it was deprioritized because Nish and I had a billion things to do and we hadn't raised money. We were very, very scrappy. So that kind of like became our last priority. Now, again, we've kind of picked that back up because I think that TikTok and all social media for that matter is a really powerful tool to connect with your consumers and just show people who you are as a brand. Because I think nowadays you have to have an awesome product, but you also, like, in order to get people in through the doors, you also have to be a brand that resonates with people and people feel a certain way about your brand. You know, it's not just, that's a pretty product, let me buy it. Like people want to get to know the brand, like who is the brand, you know? And I think as a brand, you have to show up almost as a creator does and show your personality. It's not just pictures of your pretty product. Like that just doesn't work anymore. So we're definitely like using TikTok and Instagram for that. I think they're both really, really powerful and incredibly important platforms to connect with your consumer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to share your brand stories too and
absolutely
how this even started.
Mm-hmm. Like it's insane. Like the number of brands I started shopping from or like like magazine, like publications I started, I hadn't even heard of prior to TikTok, but I was like, oh my God, like the girls who work at your office are so cool. Or like, oh my God, like your founder is so dope. Like, let me buy this or like, let me read this. And just, I got into those brands because of TikTok and because they, like, I just got to know the brand, you know what I mean? So it is just, it's an incredible platform.
It is. Let's hope it doesn't go away.
Well, we won't know for a year or so.
Yeah.
They said 1 year.
Maybe.
Oh, I thought it
this
was
is like, allegedly. I'm not CNN. Please don't believe it. Oh, legislation takes a while.
Yeah, that's true. How many employees do you have now? How big's your team?
We have, I think it's 13 people in house now. 12 or 13.
Oh my gosh. And have you taken investment or done any like rounds like that?
Yeah, we did. Okay. We bootstrapped for a really long time.
Yeah.
And then we took a small amount of capital later on.
And that was just to grow like product and quantities.
Yeah, exactly. It was just like to do things like fund our inventory and ensure that we were able to hire a few more people. And we just wanted like a little bit of strategic help as well. So we love our investors. They have been absolutely incredible. And we're just very, very grateful to have them on our cap table.
Yeah. So they're kind of adding benefit as well beyond just the capital.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Yeah. Each, we've been very selective about who we take on as investors because as a company grows, there's obviously growing interest. And if your company is successful, you'll have that interest. But I like to caution founders first, don't raise if you don't need to, because there's nothing better than you having the most equity there. Yeah. And if you have full ownership, that's great. If you want to take on outside capital, I really think that anyone you bring on needs to have something that they bring to the table outside of money, because I don't know, like, it's just really important as you scale. And I've heard horror stories of people taking on capital for the sake of capital. And then that person or that institution that you take money from being the worst fit for you. And when you're bringing on investors, it's like you're really getting into bed with someone. So you better like them, and because you're going to marry them. So, you know, make sure that they're a good fit. Otherwise, they can make your life hell, and that they offer something unique. So we love our investors. We were really, really selective and very strategic about who we brought on. And I'm glad that we did.
Yeah. Was your process like you were pitching them, or is more kind of like reversed, I imagine, because you were getting...
It was both. Yeah. Like we had a lot of inbound interest. We also went out to investors. Like we were connected to investors based on friends. And so it was kind of an amalgamation of both. And we ultimately landed on like a small group who we really love.
At what point did you say that I needed outside help and outside investment?
Not till a year and a half into the business, and we'd done over $1 million in revenue. So we were like, and I think like that is, look, everyone's situation is different. If you need cash to start a startup, absolutely go raise that money. But for us, we really, really wanted to be as scrappy as we could and use our own money to grow the business as big as we could and know that we had a minimum viable product and that this company would be a big success. Because then when we did go out to fundraise, I think we had a little bit more leverage. We had to give up a small stake in our company in comparison to what others do. So I think for founders, like it's interesting because we read headlines and it's like, oh my God, like fundraising, like it sounds really sexy. First of all, it's not, okay? Like it's like truly, it takes up all of your time. It's a pain in the ass. But then also I think that if you go in having proof of concept, you are just a stronger candidate and people are more likely to invest in you and it just is an easier process. So that's the advice I'd give.
And with that capital, does it allow for further expansion? Like, do you have pretty robust plans for the next couple of years because of that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, between that and revenue and profits, like we definitely have plans. Like we have new products launching. We're just coming off a product launch. We just launched our Heartburn product and that was in February. So that was really successful. I mean, yeah, like there's... Like we're expanding the team. Like we have different initiatives that we're working on. It allows us to place bigger POs, get working capital. So there's like so much that you can do with that cash. And it's just about being strategic about how you use it.
Yeah, that's so smart.
What's next in line for product-wise or initiative-wise, as you said?
We just have like cool stuff coming up all summer. In September, I believe, we have a launch coming up. I cannot disclose what it is yet, but it is a really exciting one, which I think people will be very stoked for. And yeah, I'm really excited about that. But yeah, over the summer, we have different activations coming up, different community-led efforts, different collaborations. So people are going to see a lot from us. I just can't share what it is quite yet. But yeah.
More to come.
More to come.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. Stay tuned. What is your role like day-to-day as like co-founder of the company?
So my husband and I are co-founders and co-CEOs, and essentially our like division is he handles the analytical side of the business and I handle the creative side of the business. So all things brand, vision, look, feel, community, everything there is all me. Brand voice, so I touch things like emails, like literally all of that is me. And then Nish handles things like very like data-driven things. So for example, like paid advertising, optimizing things like LTV, AOV, CAC, like all these like nerdy things that other founders will know, but like lifetime value of a customer, average order value of a customer, like how can we improve the subscription rate? So like basically optimizing everything that we can in the website, paid ads, like Facebook, et cetera, that all falls under Nish. If there's any like finance heavy things, then that goes under Nish as well. So we have like really, I guess, like complementary skill sets because we cover each other's blind spots. He is incredibly, incredibly smart. He comes from like a software engineering background. So he's a real nerd. And I'm like a creative through and through. So we have truly like the best partnership. And so, yeah, that's kind of our division of responsibilities.
Oh, I love hearing that because sometimes you hear
totally the wrong
right, exactly. Especially partners in itself, but life partners and then working together too. I'm sure it's easy, but it gets hard at the same time. But it sounds like you guys have a very clear vision of like your role sets at the company.
Yeah. I mean, we're like very intentional about it. I think we have a lot of trust and respect in one another's abilities. And we just love being co-founders. Like I always knew that if I started a business, I would have to get Nish as my co-founder because we're so complementary and yet so opposite in terms of like what we do. And so it's always really healthy as well to have someone who has like diversity in thought because sometimes like I'll think I want to do a certain thing, but then he'll make me think about it in a different way. And so it's such a value add and it always kind of stretches me in a way as well. So I love working with him. I'm really, really lucky.
Yeah, you are.
Nish, we should have had Nish on too.
Yeah, right, I know.
He's the best. He's like actually the best.
I'm Nish, can you please come on next time?
Oh, yeah. He absolutely. I'll send him over.
And you guys live in LA, right? Mm-hmm. But you're from Canada. Mm-hmm. Was that like a big change? Has to be, right? I love Canadians, by the way. They're like the nicest
people. We really are. I will
so
say.
So nice.
I know. Canadians are just, yeah, we're good people. Was it a big change? I mean, I guess, yeah. But Nish and I have grown up, both of us kind of traveling a lot and like living in different places. So for us, it was never like, I know some people are like the thought of a cross country or like a like different country move altogether is like daunting or like unthinkable. But for us, we've kind of grown up moving around. So I guess it was like a little bit of a change, but I had friends here. I still do. Like, it's very easy for me to make friends. And so I don't think it was, it wasn't
that
big a deal.
And you felt like it was a good place for the business too.
Oh yeah. The reason we moved was because we knew that our business was going to grow fast in both LA and New York because we just know our audience and we kind of understand consumer patterns. And that's exactly what happened. We grew really quickly in both New York and LA. And we were initially planning on moving to New York, but came to LA. Just the quality of life is amazing here. There's a great community of other founders and we just loved it here. Also, our team grew in LA. Like, we had one person and then just kind of continued to add to it. Now almost our whole team is here. We have like three people who don't live here.
Yeah.
And now we hire exclusively in LA. So that's why we moved, because the quality of talent was amazing here. Our business grew really fast here. It's also the kind of epicenter of all things health and wellness.
Yeah,
so you really, you get to like find out what's trending. Like, consumers talk about things before they kind of become mainstream anywhere else.
Yeah, no, that's so true. Well, this was incredible. Like, I loved learning about your story and the brand. And
thank you guys for having me. This is really fun.
Yeah. Where can people follow you?
You can find Array at array.co on social media or shop us at array.com. And you can find me at Sif Hyder on all social media platforms.
Yay.
Thank
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Bye.